Radio City Talk.
The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Right, the new updated version of Professor Phil Scraton's acclaimed book, Hillsborough, The Truth, which is widely accepted as a definitive account of the disaster and its aftermath, has been released. So let's catch up now with Professor Scraton and find a little bit more out about this. Morning to you, Professor.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining me. Just tell us a little bit about the book itself in terms of you writing it. Obviously, this is the updated version. When was it first released?
Well, I think, Steve, the real motivation for writing the book came out of the two reports that we wrote, the first in 1990, the second in 1995, that had been commissioned by the Liverpool City Council. Both of those extensive reports written by the Hillsborough Project, which they were written when I was based at Edgehill University in Ormskirk, and they kind of set the tone because they were highly critical of all of the processes that had occurred right from the early inquest through to the aftermath of the inquest and the abject failure of the state to provide appropriate investigation and full investigation into Hillsborough. So I think that, well, as you know, as everybody on Merseyside knows, that what came out of that was Jimmy McGovern's excellent film, Hillsborough, and I worked quite closely with the researcher on that, the late, great Katie Jones, who actually went on to work with me on the Hillsborough Independent Panel. And when the film came out, I think I realized then that we were getting towards the end of the road and the failings, the abject failings of the system were such that we needed to investigate it further. So in 1999, I wrote the first edition of Hillsborough, The Truth. And the main message of that, and it seems so long ago now, was that I revealed that the statements of all police officers had been reviewed and altered. And that was the real obvious moment when I felt, this is it now. We're going to have a thorough new investigation. And what we received was silence. The book was well received, but nothing happened. And it wasn't until we got to the 20th anniversary, and as we all know, the famous speech by Andy Burnham in front of the families at Anfield at the memorial, that we then were moving on. At that time, I produced another edition of Hillsborough, The Truth with an extra two chapters, which really made the case for all that followed. And, of course, what came out of that was the Hillsborough Independent Panel. I headed the research on the Hillsborough Independent Panel. Katie Jones was also on the panel. And, of course, the Hillsborough Independent Panel, I think, reversed the entire process. That was when we realized, well, when the nation realized that what the Hillsborough families and the Hillsborough survivors had been saying at that point for 24 years was actually true, that they had been failed by the system. There had not been a full and thorough investigation despite all the money, all of the cases that had been before the different forms of investigations and courts. And, well, as everybody knows, 153 findings of the Hillsborough Independent Panel demonstrated absolutely clearly once and for all that the fans were not to in any way responsible for Hillsborough, and in actual fact, there had been failings, multiple failings by the police and other authorities. So that was the moment, I guess, when I thought that I would write the final version of Hillsborough, The Truth. But then again, what happened, of course, was the inquest followed, and I've been working on the inquest with the legal teams on secondment from my job at university. And now is the time, I felt, to add those final chapters, the chapters on the panel, the all that happened after the panel's report, and then, of course, the inquest. And so the very final chapter is an analysis of the inquest and the outcome, obviously, which exonerated the fans, laid the responsibility for Hillsborough exactly at the doors of those that we had argued for so many years from the research that it should be placed.
How different a book do you feel it is now, Professor?
Well, I think I think, Steve, it's a combination of two things. One, it is now the complete history of Hillsborough from day one. It actually starts with interviews with families and survivors in the very early days. And it traces the whole journey from those early days through all the court cases, through all the media coverage, much of that media now who is so sympathetic with not so sympathetic at the time, as you know only too well. And we came through all of that. It tells that story. I suppose it chapter and verse, if I made a claim for it, I'd say it was chapter and verse, what happened as it happened. And then, of course, now the final three chapters are the inside story of the Hillsborough Independent Panel, because obviously I was there with my researchers. The research was carried out at Queen's University in Belfast, with where I am now. And, it then comes through from there into exposing, I think, all that happened in the period that followed Hillsborough, but also exposes all that happened in the period that followed the publication of the Hillsborough Independent Panel report, the resignation, for example, of Norman Betterson, former chief constable of Merseyside, was forced to resign from his chief constable's post in West Yorkshire. And it tells that story. It tells the story of the how the Hillsborough Independent Panel report was received universally, positively, but it also shows how then a new phase of the South Yorkshire Police trying to cover their backs occurred. And, of course, it then goes right into the inquests and shows, without any question, that those inquests could have been completed as they were first intended, could have been completed within a year. But, in fact, it was the police rowing back on their apologies, their earlier apologies from the chief constable when the panel's report came out, rowing back on that, and then running another case for, and I think adding an extra year to the inquest and putting the families and survivors through all of that again by coming to the court and repeating all of those allegations that the police had made in the early days, repeating them throughout 2015. And I think that was nothing short of an outrage. Because it had been made very clear earlier on, but by the panel's report, but also by their own chief constable's admission, that the South Yorkshire Police had failed. And they hadn't only failed in terms of the day, they had failed in terms of the investigations, they'd failed in terms of the truth, and inevitably, therefore, they failed the families in terms, and the survivors, in terms of justice.
And in terms of conduct as well, I mean, as we know so acutely here on Merseyside, so many lies told, so many mistruths, so many sinister elements to this. Now, there's a piece in your book which is hard to sort of steer your head away from. You have to read it a few times. And this is where you talk about a sinister call to your ex-directory number, which comes across almost as a threat, Professor.
Well, I think, Steve, sometimes over Hillsborough, you know, I felt I'd walked into a movie set, and this was one of those moments. I was actually at home and I was preparing the dinner for my two boys. At that time, I was living in Burscombe and working at Edge Hill. And the phone call came through, and this voice, which was well-spoken, basically told me, without any hesitation, told me that they'd read something in the Lancashire Evening News about the research I was doing. And they raised Hillsborough, and they said that, you know, basically my work was a tissue of lies and so on and so forth. And I could kind of take that because I've had anonymous phone calls before. But it was when they threatened my family. It was when they threatened my children. They told me which school they went to, when they went to school, when they left home, etc., etc. And it was a dreadful shock, and I've never talked about it before because I never wanted to distract, like there have been so many other instances. I didn't want to distract I didn't want me to become the story, if you know what I mean, because it was the Hillsborough families and survivors that I was concerned about. But that last passage in the book is where I'm standing on the steps of St. George's Hall with the families immediately after the verdict, that the wonderful, when 30,000 people turned out, and the wonderful scenes there. And I was reflecting back on all the different issues that had arisen in my own life as a consequence of Hillsborough, and that was one of them. I went straight to the police and I reported it. I actually walked out of the house at that moment and went straight to the local police station and reported it. And, of course, I will never know the provenance of that. I will never know who it was. And in one sense, it doesn't matter because it's not me that's the story. But it was one of a long list of situations where it's probably the most extreme because it involved my children. But, you know, it was one of a long list of threats and side threats and inferences that I'd had over a long period of time, including my work, my workplace. I think that, you know, that's what happens when people are attempting to uncover something that is clearly going to compromise the best interests of those who have institutional power in those situations.
Yeah, when you take on the establishment, although even then I'm not sure you expect things like that to happen. And you said at the start, it feels like something that would be more akin to something you'd see at the cinema.
Yes, I mean, I don't really, I suppose, want to dwell on it too much because it's gone, it's in the past. Mm. But there were a whole range of other situations, you know, where I felt that we were knocking on a closed door. You know, even you know, the newspapers, when sympathetic as they some of them were towards Hillsborough, were saying that the Hillsborough project in its early days was a waste of money, when my former vice chancellor at that time instructed me that if Hillsborough was interfering with my other academic work, then maybe I should think about ceasing the work. You know, now we're quite incredibly, and I say this with all humility, that I'm being given the freedom of the city of Liverpool. And, you know, I look at that and everybody is now in line and agrees with the importance and significance of the work. Over the years, that wasn't always the case. And, you know, I kind of felt the isolation that quite clearly, on many occasions, the families and survivors felt, although their isolation my isolation is nothing by comparison. I didn't lose anybody at Hillsborough. I wasn't having to deal with personal grief in the way that they were. But you get you know, working closely with the families and survivors, you certainly get that feel of what that isolation meant at the time. And now, of course, Hillsborough is everybody's, you know, everybody will say, oh, yes, we knew there was something dreadful all along, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not how it felt when at that time you were doing that work, you know, and when those kind of threats, either mild threats or clear threats come in, and it never fazed me in that sense. Of course, it worried me, but it never fazed me in that sense because, you know, I live in Northern Ireland now where a threat is a real threat, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so it didn't feel like that, but what it felt like was that you were, in one sense, it was, I suppose, you're on the right lines. You know that you were, you know, ironically, it's a demonstration that what myself and others were doing at that time was asking the right questions. We were getting under the skin of those who had an awful lot to lose. And it wasn't just that they've had what they've lost is not just their own version of events. They've lost credibility, and I think that was one of the issues that came out of the inquest most starkly, was to see senior police officers and other police officers being allowed to come to court, knowing that they're going to be prosecuted because they'd already been warned by Operation Resolve that they were under investigation for a criminal offence, knowing that they were going to be, in all likelihood, were going to be prosecuted. And because they were innocent until proven guilty, quite rightly, they were able to spin the story they wanted, and that's what they did. The problem was that the jury didn't believe them. The jury saw those lies for what they were. And I think that itself was, to me, the ultimate moment of truth, was when you see discredited officers, although the jury didn't know that, discredited officers coming before court, telling their story, and then a jury actually rejecting it. That's when you realize that the system, to some extent, is working, but it's taken 27 years to get to that point.
Well, I think it's widely accepted. Your research, your contribution, your desire to help find that truth has been absolutely imperative to how this has all unfolded. Thanks for your time this morning. Hillsborough, the truth, the definitive account of the disaster and its aftermath. It's out now. It's been updated, and it's in the shops now, isn't it, Professor?
Yes, it is. And thank you so much for those kind words. But the final thing I want to say, without any question, is that the real heroes of Hillsborough are those families and those survivors whose lives were not only blighted dreadfully by their loss and by their experience, but who've conducted themselves with incredible dignity, who've worked patiently so hard. And only this week we know that another father has died, and just this very week. They are the prices. That is the price of Hillsborough. It is the deaths of the 96, but it's also the premature deaths of their loved ones, and the fact that children have been brought up under the cloud of Hillsborough, and their fight for truth, their fight for justice, that is where the real acclamation has to be. I have nothing but great admiration, and I say to anyone who involves themselves in cases like this, that we have a moral and political obligation to see it through to the end. That's what we do. That's our job. But the real incredible story is the story of how the families and survivors have stayed together, brought truth to the public domain, and achieved justice for their loved ones.
Professor Phil Scraton, thank you very much for your time this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
8:39, Radio City Talk. Fascinating. That book is out now. Hillsborough, the truth. It's been updated.
This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.